And now, courtesy of the 11L Network, it's LF Midwood.
LF Midwood.
And the Midwood Files. With the LF Midwood Experience. Here on Radio New York International.
You know, I used to give out the date. I usually used to do the date. I used to say, I'm going to start doing that again. I got to get it into my thing there, my yammity yammity yamma. What's it? It's because it's got to roll. It's got to be like. So welcome to the, what is it? See, the August 16th edition. It's got to flow. See, that's probably why I stopped doing it, because it wasn't flowing. But I'm going to see if I can get it back in there. Welcome to the August 16th edition of the Midwood Files. My name is LF Midwood. Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to work on that. It's something to do while I'm sitting in front of the mirror. You know, again for the umpteenth week, I feel crappy. I guess, you know, it's a little bit of the heat. I don't like the heat. I'm not a big fan of the heat. I'm a big fat guy, and I don't like the heat. Enough said. I mean, I think that breaks it down enough for you, doesn't it? I mean, fat and heat, yeah. Yesterday, I guess Saturday, was VJ Day, Victory Japan Day, and I think I always forget that VJ Day is also the anniversary of the producer and I, our anniversary. We were talking about it yesterday. We were going to go get a. We were actually at Wendy's eating a chicken sandwich, and we said, well, maybe. We'll come back to Wendy's and get another chicken sandwich. And we were like, we didn't know what we were going to do, if anything. And we came home, and I was talking to my aunt. My aunt says, aren't you going to the Mexican place for your anniversary? Isn't that what you said when you took me there for your birthday or for my birthday? And I was like, oh, yeah. So I asked the producer if she wanted to go back to the Mexican place that we had frequented so I don't even remember when that was. About a month ago, maybe a little bit over a month ago. And, yeah, it was like, yeah. So, all right, so we did that. So that's what we did earlier today. And, you know, my stomach's been, like, on and off bothering me. I think some of it's my pills. Sometimes they bother me more than others. You know, take a boatload of pills. Wasn't there a song, A Boatload of Pills? Yeah, maybe not. And then the heat, and I'm like, so, that's what we did earlier. We went, and it went well. The place is a lot of food. Those Mexicans, they bring a lot of food to the table. So it's, you know, a lot of da, 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 like that. Or is that the Italian one? Da, 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 moon hits you. No, I don't, you know what? I don't even, there's no music involved. There shall be no music. I forget which one of those it is. But we went around 5 o'clock Eastern time, and we sat down, and we had to wear a mask to get in, and they sat us at a nice table. And last time we were there, they had like every other table, but they still had the table, you know, the table they weren't using, the odd table, if you will. This time it looked like they had removed all the odd tables. So it was literally a table space between each table, which was actually, even though technically there was before, but there was now physically no table. So the optics were much better. I'm very much into optics, as most of you know. So we sat down, and let me tell you, look at he split that food out of that kitchen. Holy smokes. Holy smokes. I got a steak fajitas, and they brought out a nice, you know, flat thing of steak fajitas, you know, one of those sizzle pans. I guess I go, sizzle pan, don't touch, it's very hot. And along with that, they brought out a platter of rice and beans and friggin' guacamole. The guac has little bits of diced tomato in it, I know, as most of you know, I'm not a raw tomato fan. If you don't know, please take note by now, because should I ever arrive at your house for dinner, it's a good thing to know. Not a big raw tomato fan, but it was diced, and the rest of the guac was really nice, and I ate it. No big deal. Not even a canary complaint. Nary a complaint. Some pico de gallo there, and it was just in a couple of tortillas. It was like a boatload of food. Boatload. That's the theme of the show. Can you guess the secret word? Boatload. Anyway, it was good. It was all right. And the producer had the chicken quesadilla. So I guess it had chicken, seasoned chicken, and cheese in it. She had some beans and did she get beans and rice? I don't even know. I'm not one. I don't remember. There was so much food on the table. It was I didn't even touch my beans and rice. I brought them home. And we ordered for appetizer. Which was there practically before we arrived, was we got the beef taquitos, those sticks, the rolled sticks, right? And I don't know if you ever had the frozen ones from the supermarket. That's what most people think when they think taquitos, right? But these things, man, it's shredded beef and it's marinated. Long time marinated. That would be Chinese food. Anyway, or maybe Vietnamese, more accurately. Anyway. So there was six of those, and there was some guac, and there was some sour cream, and there was some little bit of salad with some pico de gallo on there, And I only ate two, and she ate one. And there was only six in the order, so we brought three of them home. So I brought all my rice and beans home, plus the guac and whatever else was on my platter that I didn't touch, and three of those taquitos, plus whatever was left on the taquito thing he plate, put that into a thing and brought that home to my aunt with some flan. Apparently. See, she asked us to get us some fried ice cream, because I don't know if you remember or not. I was raving. I mean raving about the fried ice cream, which I had never had before. Never had before. And it was really good, but they didn't have it. They didn't have it. That's all she wanted us to bring. Bring home some of that fried ice cream. And it was like the waitress came to the table. She was practically in tears. She was sobbing that they had run out of fried ice cream and that she was unable to get us any fried ice cream. And we only wanted one to go. It's not like we wanted to... have a fried ice cream convention or anything. So we bought a flan and we bought a whatever food we hadn't eaten. I only ate half of my fajitas, so I brought that home with the tortillas. And I actually ate that a few minutes ago because I was hungry again. I laid down. I came home. I didn't feel well. I didn't feel well before I got to the restaurant, so it had nothing to do with the restaurant. And then we didn't order like a lot of food, but they bring a lot of food. we didn't order a lot, but it's ginormous. It's ginormous. So we brought most of it home. She only ate half her order. I only ate half my order. I came home, and it had to be like 6:30 or something. And the whole experience was very fast. I mean, the food was there like lickety-split, and the place was really busy. I hope they stay open and successful because I like them a lot. They're very nice people, but the food's very good. Better than the couple of few Mexican things that I had when I was in Dallas. What's that tell you? I don't know. I don't know what that means. But the producer would probably tell you the same or close to it. So there you go. But I came home and I lay down and I fell asleep for like a couple hours. I came home and I was lying there and I'm like in the air conditioning. And I started watching a documentary, which I am prone to do. It was Un-American. The name of the documentary was Un-American. And it was a documentary about Michael Moore and his consistent lies throughout his career. And it was actually done by a guy who I think he went to high school with or something or another. And it was done in a Roger and Me fashion, which was really interesting because they tried to track him down a couple of times to get some comment from him. And he either limited or no comment. So I was watching that and I fell asleep halfway through it and it finished. And then I woke up and I realized that I fell asleep halfway through it. So I started to watch the other half. And I just, like I said, I've not been feeling groovy on and off. It's like, started Monday, really, again. I mean, I've been kind of hovering in space, lost in space, no, it's pigs in space, since forever. But Monday, Monday's VJ Day. They actually celebrate VJ Day here as a holiday, although actually Saturday was VJ Day, so go figure. That's Victory Japan, and those of you who don't know what VJ Day is. So Monday... I got up early, I got like 10 o'clock, which is like early for me. And I went with my aunt to go hang out with my great uncle George. And we were hanging out on the porch. We were over there on the porch for a couple of, a while actually, 3 or 4 hours we were over there. And it was really hot. It's been hot here. I think today it was only like 75 degrees or something, a high of 75. But prior to that, it had been in the 90s. And with the heat index, which Hank Hayes claims isn't a real thing, he may be right. It was supposed to be like 97. Monday, I mean. And it was really just, it was disgusting. And I went anyway. And I went to breakfast. We stopped for breakfast before we got there. This is my aunt and I. And we went to the Newport Creamery. And I asked for a bagel with cream cheese. And just on a lark, I said I wanted to get some breakfast sausage because they have, you know, like the links and whatnot, the regular normal breakfast links. Well, see, what they did with this bagel is they threw it on the grill. So that's how they toasted it. So it picked up all the fat and the butter from the grill, and then they put cream cheese on it. So it was like double fat and like, you know, heavy. And then the sausage was a bad idea. So all afternoon, I'm like, not doing good. And then on the way out, my aunt says she wants to go buy Chili's. And I haven't been by Chili's in a long time. But Chili's has got this iced tea, like this bottomless iced tea thing where you get a mug of iced tea. And normally, I don't know, normally they take your mug and refill it and bring it back. But with the COVID stuff, now they just leave mugs. So I actually took a picture of a bunch of mugs, 5 or 6 mugs, because I put down 4 of them easy. And if they were 16 ounces, 30, about like a gallon. Put down a gallon of iced tea. What's that? With strawberry iced tea too. I was pretty dehydrated, you know. And I had some boneless chicken blobs, which were pretty decent. But since then, also again, after I ate that, I didn't feel well and I came home. And I've been like, you know, moving in and out of consciousness since then. I had to get up early one day in the middle of the week because I was waiting for UPS to deliver a lens, or actually a couple of lenses for this camera that's on back order. So I got my lenses. Now I'm just waiting for my back-ordered camera, which is actually good news. I've just not been feeling that great. I didn't really do anything in the middle of the week, like, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Because yesterday was Friday. Like I said, I even considered not doing the show again probably an hour ago, give or take. Maybe a little bit more. And, I'm just not well. It's, you know, there's nothing horrible wrong with me, but I'm just not well. I'm not feeling great. I'm not my normal, LF Midwoodness, my effervescence. I'm not effervescence. I can't even pronounce it, let alone am I it. But it's true. I'm not. But there was, enough stuff going on in the news, and I figured I can come out and I can do an hour. Like I've been doing it, no music, you know, and I've actually gotten used to not playing music, so I don't know what that means in the long term, because I'll say that, and then all of a sudden next week I'll come out with music, because, well, I'm contrary, to say the least. That's what they should call, they should rename bipolar, just it should be contrary. What's he got? He's got contrary. Not feeling well. I had to make phone calls this week, didn't even call anybody this week, just kind of just laid around and just... So, you know, because it's like, even with the air conditioning, it's like humid, and it's like, I just can't wait for the summer to be over. I want the summer to end. Making plans for Labor Day. We're going to have another cookout on Labor Day. So that's been, you know, batting around. 3 people, like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this, honey. Okay. Yeah. And it's like, you know what? It's 3 weeks away. Everybody just step back. Step back from the calendar. Step back from the calendar. All right. 3 weeks. So anyway, that's all that's going on in my life. There's really nothing. It's been around quiet. It's been an interesting news week. I always say that, but it's generally true. First off, the president's brother Robert has passed away. I know that is recent. I would say that's probably within the last hour. Again, hour and a half. I don't know what the details were there exactly of what his illness was. I know they hadn't talked about that. I know he'd been sick for a while. But no specifics. And I believe the president put out a heartfelt tweet. Which is nice, actually. Which he very rarely does. He's very usually just very all business all the time kind of guy. I think if you look up on Twitter, I don't even know what it is exactly, but if you look it up on Twitter, there's some nice language in there. There's some nice, soft, fuzzy, warm, fuzzy language in there, which is good. Which is good. I think, what else? What else did I got some news. I'm going to get to it this week because there's nothing to distract me, I don't think. I think the big story for me is, I only have 9 pieces of news. Look at that. So that's not an awful lot. Which means I may be less than an hour. Who knows? But I think the big story for me is this this five-year-old white child who was murdered in North Carolina by a 27-year-old black man. Apparently, his neighbor. I think this happened last week. I think it was last Saturday or last Sunday. So it would not have made the cut for last show. Apparently, the dude lived across the street. He was a neighbor, and I think he defied all reports. Including those of another neighbor and this boy's two sisters, 6 and 8, I believe their ages. The guy just walked over and shot the child point blank in the head. You probably haven't heard about it because it hasn't been on the network news. It hasn't been on NBC, ABC, CBS. I don't even know if regular Fox Network has covered it, or Fox, regular Fox affiliates. I know Fox News has talked about it a bit, and I guess it doesn't fit the narrative in this time of reparations and things that need to be accounts that need to be settled, and how black lives matter as much as they apparently do. It would seem in that day and age and in that narrative, there is no time for a white child who was brutally murdered by a black man. That just does not fit the narrative. Let me see if I actually have any details. More details than I gave there. I think this is out of InfoWars, which I very rarely pull news from. Yeah, he's still just a little too used car salesmanish for me, so I kind of try to steer clear of him a little bit if I can. Here it is. Media ignores black man's alleged execution of 5-year-old white boy at point blank range. Story doesn't fit the anti-white race baiting narrative. Of course not. The mainstream media is silent after a 5-year-old white boy about to start his first year of kindergarten, boy, that brings it home, was reportedly shot and killed by his black neighbor at point blank range. In a devastating story out of Wilson, North Carolina, Darius Simmons, 25, is accused of walking up to the boy, Cannon Hinton, as he played on his bike in his family's yard before shooting him at point-blank range, the Daily Mail reports. The murder was reportedly witnessed by the boy's, 7 and 8-year-old sisters and by another neighbor. My first reaction was that he's playing with the kids, said the family's neighbor, Doris Liebrand. For a second, I thought, that couldn't happen. People don't run across the street and kill kids. The Mail reports Sessoms, who was Hinton's next-door neighbor, had dinner with Hinton's father, Austin, on Friday, and had been over to the house earlier on Sunday. While police are still investigating the motive for Sessom's random attack, a GoFundMe account has been set up for Hinton's. Hinton claims Cannon had accidentally crossed into Sessom's yard. Sunday, August 9th, 2020, a sweet soul named Cannon Hinton was taken out of this world over a senseless act, said the donation page. A beautiful 5-year-old baby boy riding his bicycle was shot by his neighbor at point blank in Wilson, North Carolina, one minute enjoying his life, the next it all ends because he rode into his neighbor's yard. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Following the shooting, Sessoms allegedly fled in a vehicle later to be found by police at a home in Goldsboro. He is currently charged with first-degree murder and being held in Wilson County Jail without bond. Despite the egregious, tragic incident, the mainstream media outlets, including CBS, NBC, ABC, and CNN, have not yet posted articles covering the story on their national platforms. Likely it is because it runs counter to their anti-white race-baiting narrative. While several local authorities have reported on the story, search results yield no articles related to the event on any of the aforementioned mainstream outlets, as is illustrated in the screenshots below. So, and that's obviously a visual thing you can't see. I hadn't been aware of for whatever excuse it is an attempt to be, that an excuse was given that the child had ridden the bike into his yard. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, honestly. So, I mean, that literally, I mean, not that a senseless act like that makes sense. That's why they call it senseless. But I'm not sure I'm even remotely willing to even entertain the notion that it was because he had ridden into his yard, particularly if the two neighbors were friends. It doesn't seem like that would be a bone of contention. And again, you know, George Floyd got... Well, how many George? George Floyd got like four funerals. I think he got like four funerals. Yeah, in four different cities. They did the George Floyd tour. They were going to get Diddy to open, but they didn't have enough money. But yeah, so a convicted felon, high on fentanyl, who had held a gun to the belly of a pregnant woman during a home invasion that he was convicted of, gets four fucking funerals. Count them. Four funerals in four cities. And the major networks aren't even willing to mention this child's name. I mean, there's plenty of things I could say about this guy that would be prerogatives. No, not prerogative. Prerogatives? They would be mean. That would be mean. You know, I could say the N-word six or seven times in a row. Or I could do, you know... Some sort of comparing them to various lower simian life forms. I feel numb, and I don't say stuff like that at all. I'm Brooklyn born. You know what I mean? I feel kind of numb. The fact that it would happen, whatever this man's motivation might have been, you know, trying to understand that, and the last part of that, I guess, maybe for me, a larger part is the idea of the media not willing to report on it again because it doesn't fit the narrative. Is that how far we've come? So Black Lives Matter at the cost of white lives? Is that what it is? That's basically what it comes down to. We have to trade one for the other. Well, let me tell you, if we have to trade one for the other, you know which one I'm trading for, right? You know which lives mean are going to, and as of this point now and going forward, mean more to me, right? Right? I don't have to say it, right? I don't have to sit here and say, oh, we should all be equal and what the, no, I'm not, I don't have any desire to come across in that manner. It's not where my heart is at. It's not what's in my heart, you know, and God's heart and Pharaoh's heart. No, not in the least bit. Not in the least bit. I think it's interesting I think I mentioned the looting in Chicago last week, right? Yeah, so there's been continued looting. I think there's been sporadic looting in certain places. I think I read something about a drugstore in San Francisco being looted today. Or if not today, it was in the last couple of days, probably more accurate. I don't know whether this was tonight or whether it was last night or possibly Thursday. Apparently some of these Black Lives Matter protesters Seattle have marched into the suburbs and demanded that white people living there in houses now currently hand those houses over because apparently it was at one point in time, quote unquote, a black neighborhood, which is really, I wonder what it looked like when it was a black neighborhood, not for nothing, because we know what most of those black neighborhood looks like, right? Now you can have black people living in a white neighborhood and it's still a nice neighborhood, but like actual nice black neighborhoods, I've not seen. I don't know. I'm not saying they don't exist, but I don't know what they are. I've never seen them. I've never seen a nice black neighborhood. And there's a reason for that, because, you know, black people have generally tend to destroy whatever was given to them. You know, and I guess they feel out of some sense of, again, reparation. I guess that's the idea. I guess that's what we're talking about here. I guess we're talking about these people in Seattle, these alleged people in Seattle claiming that somehow... for some reason, that white people owe them something. The idea of reparations even being talked about, even mumbled about within the halls of the Democratic Party, is frightening. It's 100% frightening, you know? And there are some people who do have some class and manage to conduct themselves with some level of distinction. I believe police chief in Seattle, I forget her name offhand, I believe she's resigned. Primarily because a year ago, the city council had approved of $1.6 million, so that the police chief could go out and recruit and hire some of the best and people who would represent the various communities. So I guess this would be Black, Asians, whites, whatever the story may be, a good mixed bag of people that would represent the cross section of people in Seattle. I think that they've been defunded by about $1.6 million. So now she has to turn around and let all these people go after a year. Probably not what she had in mind. And she's got the guts to say, you know what, this is not what I signed up for. This is not not what I want to do. This is not what I want to be about. This is not what I want to be involved with. And she quit. So I give her credit for that. And again, I think she's the first Black police chief of a major city anywhere. I think I could be wrong about that, but I'm not 100% sure. I think I read that. I wish I could remember her name. I could look it up, but, you know, I'm horrible at stuff like that. It's only details. Yeah. So, yeah, that was pretty pretty shoddy in regards to having to do that. But I give her credit for leaving. What do we got here? Let's see. Okay. This also, I guess, kind of ties in when we're talking about protests. This would have been, is this Kentucky again? I'm not sure. Let me see. Proud Boy moved, this is Michigan. Proud Boys moved through Western Michigan amid counter protests. This is in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Members of the Proud Boy group, which I thought was disbanded, but apparently not, moved through Western Michigan on Saturday. The group originally planned to hold a rally in Arcadia Creek Arcadia Creek Festival Place in Kalamazoo, an outdoor area and event space. After hundreds of counter-protesters and police arrived at the location, the group began to move through the city. Okay, and there's some tweets here about them moving around. Police had a large presence throughout the demonstration and could be heard over the speakers telling the crowds to clear from the area. The Southern Poverty Law Center lists the Proud Boys as a hate group because of what the center says the group's frequent denigration. Oh, he did it. He pulled it off. Denigration. Phonics. Denigration of Muslims, Islam, misogynistic rhetoric, I always get that one. And its role as a gateway to other extreme groups. Yeah, they're like the marijuana of hate groups. That's what they are. Kalamazoo city leaders said the Proud Boys did not reserve any park space or request a permit to hold an event in the city. But Kalamazoo deputy city manager Jeff Chamberlain said the groups don't necessarily need a permit to protest. Hello. A church reserved Arcadia Creek Festival Place at the same time the rally was set to start in what organizers said was a counter-protest against the Proud Boys. Pastor Nathan Dennison said they were to stand up for their fellow community members. It's up to the rest of the community to stand up and say these people these are people and we're not going to stand by while you come and bash them or do violence to innocent people, Dennison said. Chamberlain released a statement in the city Thursday saying Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety is monitoring the situation and would be ready to respond if necessary. Bigotry and hatred in any form are not acceptable in Kalamazoo. Nor is violence, said the city, is prepared to act quickly if necessary, the statement said twice. This is a really horribly written thing. Who is this? What is this? Oh, this is WSBT, so this is the local affiliate. That is a horribly written article. Yeah, 100%. I hate stuff like that when I'm reading it, and I'm like, it just doesn't make sense to me. And then I still continue to read it because, well, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to correct, real-time correct? Come on! I'm dyslexic, dude. I can barely read it to begin with. If it were perfectly crafted, I could barely read it anyway. And then they do stuff like that. But anyway. Yeah. More protesting, and I guess the I think the mayor in Chicago was, I think she managed to break up. There was some sort of gay beach thing that was going on, gay beach party, for lack of a better term. Perhaps it really was a gay beach party that she managed to be able to control, but she couldn't control the violence and the looting that had occurred in her city prior. That would be last week. So I'm getting in the way back machine, as they say. I just think it's going to get to a point. Like I said, I know I've talked about the movement losing steam, you know, because at the end of the day, a nigger is still a nigger, and there's nothing that the federal government or any other entity on the face of the planet can do to change that, and that's already in the historic record. It's already there. It's already been proven. It's not a theory. What would happen if we threw millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars behind these people? How far do you think we could elevate these people if we threw millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and another million of dollars at these people? We could surely raise them. We could raise them out of the mire that is their existence. Surely we could do that. Not so much. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Anyway, that being said, I think, again, we already have this on record. It's been proven. And I do think that eventually people are just going to get tired of it. They're literally same people who went out and bought all the guns and the same people who went out and bought all the scanner radios so they could stay on top of what's going on in their cities, because they're afraid, because they're scared, and because the police departments of major cities are being defunded and police are being, denigrated. I'll use that word. Police are being denigrated all the time. Law enforcement is being denigrated all the time. These same people, who were scared and bought the guns, they're going to get tired of the shenanigans. They're going to get tired of it. That's what's going to happen. Somebody's going to march up to somebody's house. Some Black Lives Matter monkey is going to march up to someone's house and demand their house, and they're going to blow their fucking head off. And it's going to be like, okay. And that's going to become the norm. And that's what needs to happen. It needs to be a little bit of violence. There needs a little bit of violence into the mix. These people need to know that they can't take away other people's right to safety. And if the government isn't going to make people safe, which it never can, by the way, never can. Not for nothing. At the end of the day, you call 911 many times. People have tried to sue 911 because they can't get there fast enough and something really bad happens. And the government has total liability in that case. The municipalities, the police, the fire, whatever it is, has total liability in the case. Can't hold them responsible. So what happens is that people realize that they have to arm themselves. So not for nothing. Again, if you're able, if you can afford it, and your legal status is such, I highly, highly suggest that you start arming yourself. You know, it's hard now. There's a lot that's, guns they're getting harder and harder to find. Sales are up. And up and up. But I suggest you start the process. Whatever that process may be, you start it. You start getting some money together. You start looking at it. You start looking to see if what you need to do to get whatever the blue card is, or what the equivalent of the blue card is, at the very least, maybe you go to a range and you start renting and you start to get a feel for what it's like to use a weapon, preferably the weapon that you would prefer to eventually buy, whether it be a handgun, a rifle, shotgun. Start doing it, because there isn't going to be anybody there to save your ass is what it comes down to. You're going to have to take care of yourself and your family. That's it. That's the message. That's the message that's been given. I've said very many times with that, just let me know what the rules are, and then we'll go from there. We'll roll from there. And it would appear to be that, these Democratic governors and these Democratic mayors are sending the message to the bad guys, to the bad actors, if you will, that it's perfectly acceptable. And that they, not only is it perfectly acceptable, but that they even deserve their reparations. They deserve their pound of flesh if they can't get their reparations. They deserve it. Black people deserve it. They deserve it. Okay, I'm gonna say it one more time. They deserve it. So that being said, you got to do what you got to do for you and yours. Defunding. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. And the irony of it is that, from my understanding, and I can't pick one particular poll, but I've heard polling, how accurate those polls are, right? I've heard polling that says that the vast majority of Afro-Americans, and I hate calling them that, but Afro-Americans in Afro-American neighborhoods don't want there to be less police because it's black people preying on black people that's the largest problem. You don't have white people going to black neighborhoods and killing them, robbing them for their drugs and their money. You don't have that happening. It's not. It's black-on-black violence is the problem. So if black-on-black violence is the problem, and black-on-white violence is a problem that doesn't get talked about, and the only problem that does get talked about is the minuscule blue-on-black violence, it says to me that black people are the problem. Say that one more time. Black people are the problem. They need to fix it. Okay? Those black people who don't have anything to do with that and are upright, upstanding citizens, they need to make a stand. And when they need to make a stand is they need to make a stand against something as frivolous as Black Lives Matter because it's a sham. It's a joke. Talk to them about black-on-black violence and they shut the fuck up. They're like, that's not what we're here for. No. No. You're here. You're here because you feel you deserve something. You're here because of the minuscule amount of black people who die at the hands of police. Far more white people die at the hands of police. Probably brown, too, I would bet. Not for nothing. Brown being Latino. You know, brown, black, yellow. Lella. My sinuses are killing me. So where am I? Let's see. Police move in. What's this API? I have something here for the API doesn't always come up the way it should. Okay. Texas school drops. School is reopened. Okay. Texas is upset. They're reopening. A lot of Texans are actually upset because the schools themselves are reopening, but they're not really doing any testing, which is actually kind of weird, or at least from what I've been able to read. I'd have to talk to somebody in Texas, which I suppose I'm able to do, to find out if that's how accurate that is. You know, because the idea, again, being that the children really aren't carrying too much, but I mean, there's so many. The problem with Texas, and I mean this in the kindest of ways, is that it's just way too large. And there's way too many municipalities within the actual counties. There's got to be like 30 counties in Texas, 25, 30 counties, maybe even more. It's just ginormous. It's kind of like the problem in Rhode Island. It's funny you're talking about Rhode Island because Rhode Island, it's all municipalities. And there's a lot of it's left to the individual counties and municipalities. So it's all like little fiefdoms here. So it's a little state, but you can't get any consensus on anything, on how to do anything. It's the same thing in Texas, only Texas is obviously a lot, what is it, 3-4 times bigger than Rhode Island? I don't even know. So people are concerned. People are definitely concerned. I got some new masks. The producer ordered some new black comfy masks that I tried out today, that at least are, you can't get into a restaurant without a mask. This is what I find is kind of funny, right? So, you have to have a mask to get into the restaurant, right? Any restaurant, really, in Rhode Island at this point in time, those are the seating people. And then as soon as you get to the table, you can take your mask off. Now, your servers are wearing masks, which is good. They wear them all the time. But the point now becomes is that I understand that the supposedly social distancing and the table and the spaces between these tables and all that jazz. But, you know, God forbid, like, someone's infected and they sneeze. That's like going at, like 120 miles per hour. What do they say sneezes go at? Maybe even faster than that. Maybe like a faster than a bullet even. Well, maybe not that fast. But fast, you know. So if I sneeze and I don't have my mask on, I feel like we're going through the motions. I feel it's like the oxygen masks in the airplanes, you know, like when the plane's about to come down and the pilot says we're going to crash, and you know, and then the oxygen masks come down and then you put them on and all it does is calm you down. It just, you know what I mean? It's not going to do a damn thing to save you. You're going to die. You're going to be hitting the ground at like, you know, 7,000 miles per hour, however fast it is. All it does, because it's pure oxygen they're pumping into you. So they calm you down, like any, you know, in the casinos, they calm you down. So you're just like, oh, death, yeah. So I got to wonder if it's really doing anything. You know, what is like the placebo effect? Like it's all one big placebo effect. I have to wonder. There's a whole other conspiracy. And I was talking to my my youngest cousin, who's 35, so we don't get to talk very often. So I was on the phone with her for a while, and we're talking about the virus. And I said, you know, because she's a reasonably rational person. She's a rational person, not even a reasonably rational person, you know. And she likes to know how people think. And she likes to know, like, what the thought process is, not just, oh, I disagree with you, but rather understand the thought process, which is pretty cool. I don't really find that a whole lot in America anymore. So we're talking, and, you know, I said, you know, that's kind of weird, this whole thing. I'm starting to think it's like, you know, I'm not saying there isn't, like, everything I've said here, continuing now for a week, so I really don't have to repeat myself. But she's like, yeah, I could kind of see why you might think that. You know, when you have rational people, you know, telling you that, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, with the timing on all this and the mail and the mail-in ballots. And speaking of mail-in ballots, let's see. I think they, let's see. Is this here? No. Okay, this is a separate thing. I know that there was protests in front of the, I don't have that story. I have a different story. But I know just off the top of my head that there were protests at the Postmaster General's, in front of the Postmaster General's house. I wonder how they found that. But anyway, about, you know, because this is the whole, they're protesting and that he needs to go and he just came in and it's like, ding, 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 his money, and it's just like this. And that ties into the whole thing with Trump and the Congress and the money, and they're going to have the money. And I read, and I also don't have a hard copy story on this, but I understand that a certain amount of sorting machines, this is the stuff that sorts mails, you know, automatedly support us, automatic mail sorting machines. Okay, I got it out. About 15% nationwide have been taken offline. So the timing on that is kind of interesting because they don't work. And I think I've heard tell that the post office says that it would take them, they don't even know how long it would take them to get all those ballots in. Interestingly enough. And here's an interesting story. Yeah. Now, I worked for the post office. I think most of you know that for about 2 years as a letter carrier and somewhat as a clerk, but mostly as a letter carrier. So it says, postal worker rented a storage unit to hide mail because he felt pressured to deliver it. United States postal worker was caught with a public storage unit full of mail he never delivered. Jason Dela Cruz pleaded guilty to charges of delay of mail by a postal employee in August 2019. He is set to be sentenced February 12th. Dela Cruz, who worked as a mail carrier in Chesapeake, Virginia, said he felt pressured and couldn't make time to complete his mail route, according to court documents. He told authorities that he rented a public storage unit for 49 hours a month for the sole purpose of storing mail he could not deliver. The employee said he started hiding mail in November or December 2018, and that he rented the storage unit in February 2019. According to court records, he said he put the mail in there. He was unable to deliver the unit up to that time until it was discovered in May 2019. Dela Cruz told authorities he intended to deliver the mail in the storage unit, but fell behind and was never able to, according to court documents. He said he never destroyed any mail. Dela Cruz's attorney, Wilfredo Bonilla Jr., told CNN Wednesday that he was unable to comment at this time. Agents from the United States Postal Service of the Inspector General's office found almost 5,000 pieces of mail in the storage unit in Virginia Beach. They discovered 97 pieces of first-class mail, which included letters from the Department of Motor Vehicles, the IRS, insurance companies, bank statements, and tax return documents. Jeez. Magazines and other publications were made up of 115 pieces of mail. There was also one undelivered package found in the unit. The bulk of the mail was advertisements, more than 47,000 ads of that, I'll explain in a moment. The Postal Service delivered first-class mail after it was found. The ads were discarded because they were old by then. The employee no longer works for the Postal Service. USPS Public Relations Manager Dave Pertenhelmer told CNN Tuesday. He resigned in 2019. He worked for 14 months prior to his resignation. Dela Cruz could face up to 5 years in prison. All right. Well, first of all, I guess he was new because he didn't seem to. They said he worked for 14 months, which is really not a long time. See, the thing about the mail. Is the mail never stops. You could take every piece of mail that has on your route that's included with you, get the overtime, 2 hours overtime, so you get all the mail, clean the whole thing up, totally clean the whole thing up. Not a stitch of mail when you walk out the door. And then you go and you deliver the mail and you come back and it starts all over again. The mail never stops. That's the thing that you have to get used to. If you can get used to the fact that the mail never stops, and you can deal with whatever pressure that endures, you could probably work for the postal office. Probably. Now, it's interesting because I worked there for, like I said, 2 years. And I would say, until you know what you're doing, and this is the biggest problem. If you don't know what you're doing and you're on a different route every day, if you're left on like the same route every day, you learn the route and you get quicker at it. You get faster. And there's that term in there. You make time on the route, which means you actually finish the route quicker than you've been allotted time, which means that there's extra time for you. Bonus time. Bonus, even though you're getting paid for it. It's just the way it is with the post office. It's always been that way. It's interesting that they find themselves in such debt, but I guess having been dealing, because I worked for the post office like 20 years ago, so, you know, maybe even more than that now. In dealing with, yeah, a lot more than that, 25 years ago now that I think about it, I was 23, 27 years ago. Wow, that's a long time. So I left 27 years ago when I left, they were just doing peachy. You know, I just wanted to say it didn't have anything to do with me. Right? Since I'm gone, you know, the place is gone to shit. No, not actually. But I guess 27 years of dealing with the internet and email and, you know, they talk about the bulk, you know, they call it junk mail, but it's not junk mail. That bulk mail and those bulk mail permits, that's where the post office really makes its money. It doesn't really make money on first class mail. It makes all its money on junk mail. So, and it's really funny because my Uncle George was on the porch complaining about the junk mail on Monday. He gets a lot of junk mail. He doesn't like it. So I was going to tell him, but I figured now just, you know, try to explain to him that that's where the post office actually makes its money. But I didn't feel like getting that deep into that particular topic because he really seemed kind of irate. Because his whole couch in the living room is just full of mail. It's full of junk mail, by his estimation. They all want money from him. Leave me alone. I'm old. Leave me alone. It's pretty much where he's at. So, but that's an interesting story. You don't hear stuff like that very often, you know. And I guess all of this is being one way or another. If you look at it, it's, you know, it's, you have to view this through the optics of what's going to be happening with this mail and vote. Again, some places, and I'm not saying it's tamper-proof by any stretch of the imagination, so I don't really advocate it except for absentee ballots. Anyway, that's my own personal view on the matter. Just legitimate absentee voting. But apparently there are some jurisdictions that have it down pat, like apparently in Washington State, they've been doing it pretty well for more than a couple of years. And a couple other places, a couple other jurisdictions have been doing it pretty well for a couple of few years. So they know how to handle it. The idea becomes is you're going to all of a sudden throw this onto an already burdened postal service in larger areas who are ill-prepared to deal with it to begin with. And then it's just going to turn into a... It's not even the time. I mean, even if it takes 2-3 days for them to get them all in and counted, it's not even that. It's the whether you can trust those results. That's the thing that concerns me the most. Totally thing that concerns me the most. So, I mean, we're going to have to see. This is really kind of scary stuff. It's interesting how you could, go rioting and you can have all sorts of protests, thousands and thousands and thousands of people running around and, nobody gets sick, you know. Nobody, it's that. That's okay. That's when they're talking to Fauci when he was up on the hill there. It's like, how is it that all these protests, nobody, that's perfectly fine, but people want to go to church, and they can't go to church. The government's stopping them from going to church. Speaking of which, I might have a story on that. Let's see, Democratic. Okay, yeah, this is not a Breitbart. I don't know if Breitbart's gonna. I don't know if the story's gonna. Pop up, or what is this going to? Nope, it did. Okay, imagine that. Court uphold church's right to hold indoor worship over California officials' ban. Yay. So that's a win. A California court upheld on Friday the right of Pastor John MacArthur and Grace Community Church to remain open to hold indoor worship services amid bans on the services enacted by Governor Gavin Newsom and other state and city officials. According to the press release by Thomas Moore, by the Thomas Moore Society, just hours after litigation firm filed a lawsuit in the Superior Court of the State of California, County of Los Angeles, on behalf of MacArthur and the church, Judge James Chalfant, denied the county's request for a temporary restraining order to block the church's indoor services. Yay. The Thomas Moore Society noted James Chalfant denied almost all of the county's requests at the August 14th Los Angeles Superior Court hearing. That would have been Friday. Agreeing with MacArthur and the church that it's only the county's burden to show that they should be permitted to infringe upon the constitutionally protected rights of the churches to freely exercise religion. Chalfant expressed safety concerns. Attorneys for the Great Church explained that the Los Angeles County was being unreasonable in its demands and offered to have the congregation comply with face mask wearing, social distancing indoors, and so the matter could be fully heard. This was stipulated as a more reasonable action than the county's rush to shut down the church services. The judge agreed and set a full hearing for September 4th, 2020. According to the church, to have congregants wear masks and social distance between family groups indoors. Excellent. This is really good news. And I bet they did kick its ass in that September hearing as well, too. It's just ridiculous. It's just absolutely, positively, 100% ridiculous. Where all these other things are perfectly fine, but going to church, not so much. Let's close the churches and leave the liquor stores open. I don't like the message that sends. You know, I forget who I was having this conversation with, but I think it's a conversation I have very many times, and I know I've talked about it here, where the idea becomes the farther we've moved away from God, the worse things have been for this country, you know, in its own way. You know, God is and it's, maybe God's punishing. I say all the time, maybe God's punishing us for all those murdered babies. Maybe it's as simple as that. Maybe we are our brother's keeper in a larger sense. Maybe. I don't know. I can't fathom to know what goes through God's mind, quite frankly. And I wouldn't presume, quite frankly. My head's big, but it's not that big. Let's see. What's this? I don't even know what I got going on over here. At least 846 dead people tried to vote in Michigan's August primary. 10,694 votes rejected. This is why Democrats want mail-in voting. Okay. And this is from the Gateway Pundit. Okay. At least 847 dead people tried to vote in Michigan's primary. Let's see. Michigan's largest city, Detroit, received 820 votes that were ultimately rejected. The Michigan Secretary of State, Joshua Benson, is demanding the legislature to pass a bill requiring city and township clerks to call voters who have obvious flaws in their ballot, such as missing signatures. Yeah, you think. With the turnout and absentee ballot numbers expected to double or even triple in November, we could look at tens of thousands of Michigan citizens disenfranchised from the legislation if the act fails. Yeah. Okay, so bad ballots, dead people. It's, oh man, this is going to be one of those. I don't really know if we're going to be able to trust these results. I only say that, because I'm concerned about obviously President Trump not winning. President Trump wins, we can just call it a day and go home, of course. I'm not stupid. I don't feel good about it. I think it's going to be mail in here. I'm not really good. This is an interesting thing. I'm not really so emotionally involved with what happens in Rhode Island because Rhode Island always goes blue. It's just that they're going to come out, the two electoral votes are going to go towards Biden. 100%. 100%. So it doesn't matter how I vote. And at least not. It doesn't matter at least bit, I should say. How I vote. No, not in the V. No. So, mail-in, you want to do it on a paper airplane, whatever the hell you want to do is fine, just let me know. Let me know, and I'll do it. Boy, those fajitas are killing me right now. Whew. Let's see. What else do I got? Oh, yeah, I didn't want to mention this. Fox News. Iran condemns United Arab Emirates' deal with Israel, saying it's a huge mistake. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard threatens to accelerate the process of the destruction of the child-killing Zionist regime. Ooh, wowzers. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani condemned this week's argument agreement between the United Arab Immigrants and individuals, saying that the hate saying in a heated speech Saturday that the EAU made a huge mistake. I said that already. Rouhani called the diplomatic ties between the EAU and Israel a betrayal of the will of the Palestinian people and the will of Muslims. They care about the Palestinians so much, why don't they let them live there? Anyway, in a historic move, the EAU became the third country in the Middle East to officially establish diplomatic ties with Israel in an alleged attempt to stop Israel from annexing the West Bank, a policy Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has long pushed for. We are warning them, the EAU, do not invite Israel into this region. We have a different agenda. You may be treated in different ways. To now, then it sounded something like, something like that. Have made a huge mistake, committed a treacherous act, blah, blah, blah. Not news, since made it clear that Israel has not ended any plans for annexation of the West Bank, but rather the policy has been temporarily put on hold. They're building out things with settlers there anyway, so they're doing it inch by inch. They're doing it anyway. Palestinians have said that this new alliance is not a show of increased peace or security in the region, but rather a move to further legitimize Israel's illegal occupation of the Palestinian territory in the West Bank. I never expected the poisoned actor to come from an Arab country, a senior Palestinian official and veteran negotiator Saqib Aqiq said Friday. You are rewarding aggression. We have destroyed with this move any possibility of peace between the Palestinians and Israelis, he added. Oh, well. Western nations, I'm sorry to the whole thing. Western nations and Israel deem the new agreement between the two Middle Eastern countries a success story, an alliance that has been sought after since the establishment of 1948. But the Palestinians, along with other Arab nations, view this move as an indicator that Israel is no longer receiving pressure to recognize the 1967 borders dictated by the United Nations. The UN recognizes Israel as having illegally occupied Palestine since 1967, a policy that Netanyahu has refused to acknowledge. Let's see. Today we are a new era of peace between Israel and the Arab world. President Trump said this week there is a good chance that we will soon see more Arab countries joining this expansion circle of peace. But Iran believes that the counter to this agreement showing stabilization in the region exemplifies that Israel is no longer needs to broker peace with Palestinians in order to grow its diplomatic ties in the Middle East. Well, that makes sense. That they think they're bringing themselves closer to the United States to the Zionist regime. They are a Zionist regime. Their security will be ensured and the economy will grow, and this is completely wrong, Rouhani said Saturday. Palestinians officials called on the Arab League and the 57 members of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the OIC, to urgently gather for a meeting to condemn the new relationship. Though Turkey and Iran are the only members of OIC that have so far denounced the new ties. Wealthy nations within the OIC, like EAU and Saudi Arabia, have taken great strides to distance themselves from Iran and the Iranian proxies operating under state-sponsored terrorism in the region, Hezbollah. Anyway, Saudi Arabia has been working with the U.S. and the Middle East to oust terrorist networks linked to Iran, a nation that the Trump administration has increasingly been at odds with. Egypt and Jordan are the two other countries in the Middle East that have established official diplomatic relations with Israel. Both the EU and Saudi Arabia have strong ties with Egypt and Jordan, suggesting that the oil powerhouses are region aligned with the U.S. and Israel. Palestinian sovereignty is looking less likely. Iran further threatened to purposely disrupt the peace in the Middle East. That's interesting. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard released a statement saying that the EAU-Israel deal would accelerate the process of destruction of the child-killing Zionist regime. I want to say that one more time. Accelerate the process of the child-killing Zionist regime, Reuters reported Saturday. Iran has claimed this newfound alliance is merely a political move to garner votes for President Trump during an election year. Well, it doesn't hurt. It certainly doesn't hurt President Trump. And you know what? Not for nothing. Here's the deal. Israel can make its own deals for oil now. You know what I mean? Israel will have enough allies where it wouldn't be prudent. Perhaps that's the term. It wouldn't be prudent for Iran or Turkey or anybody who's mad at Israel to do anything, because they wouldn't want to interrupt the flow of dollars, because they want to make money. Say what you will, they want to make money. So I think this is win-win, not for nothing. I would love for Israel to be totally autonomous and not have to deal. We wouldn't need to be involved. We could bring troops home. We wouldn't have to do anything to do with them. Nada. They were able to conduct business with their neighbors in a peaceful fashion, or at least a balance of power fashion that has nothing to do with United States troops. Bring the troops home. Bring them home. Anyway, that being said, I'm going to get out of here. It's, what time is it? It's midnight. No, it's 1 a.m. My God. I am. I'm practically delirious. I wind up delirious by the time these programs are over. Truly delirious. That being said, I'm going to get out of here. Let me do my plugs. I'll get out of here. I don't feel good. I want to lie down. Let's see. Head over to the Midwood file. No. Let's see. What is it? LFMidwood.com. That's what it is. LFMidwood.com. Yeah, head over there. You got the Midwood files up there on top. You got the 11L RNI link that takes you over to John Lightning's site. There's archives. There's fun stuff over there, like spinning wheels and all sorts of like sparklers. It's crazy. It's crazy. Head over there. All the way over to the right, you got our good friend Brad Reed over there at Grits Radio, running the Grits Radio streams. Thanks for running the show on the stream there, Brad. We appreciate it. Still don't understand why, but we appreciate it. I think that's it. What else I got? You head over there. There's social media. There's archives. There's my favorite links. I usually, during the course of the week, check out most of, if not all, those links. May not always make it over to my news stories, but I check it out. I read it. I know what's going on. Not like people say. Anyway, I'll be back next week. Yeah. Hopefully feeling better. I mean, I feel well enough to do this. I just feel crappy while doing it. How's that? That's the story of my life. I feel I'm okay. I can survive, but I just feel crappy while I'm doing it. That's pretty much it. Write that down. That's that. That's what it is. Anyway, let me play this, and I'm out of here. So, see you soon. Bye.
You've been listening to the Midwood Files on Radio New York International. Thanks for listening.